Oregon's largest corporate employer has been one of the biggest boosters calling for an infusion of taxpayer dollars into the U.S. manufacturing of computer chips. Recently, Intel got its wish, an $8.5 billion check from the federal government. I'm Elliot Noose, and this is Beat Check with The Oregonian. I'm joined today by Mike Rogaway, who covers the chip industry for The Oregonian and Oregon Live. He'll break down what this award means for Intel in Oregon and around the world. Later, we'll talk about the Oregon Employment Department and how it's handling a long-awaited upgrade to its computer system that handles unemployment claims. Mike, welcome to Beat Check.
Thanks, Elliot. Glad to be back.
So let's back up a little bit on this funding for the chip industry. Where is this federal money coming from?
Yeah, so this goes back to some degree before the pandemic, but especially, you know, the early days of the pandemic, even during the Trump administration, it became clear we had these supply chain snarls, and it became clear that computer chips are essential for everything, not just our data centers and our laptop computers and video game machines, but our cars and refrigerators and dishwashers, that they perform important tasks, vital tasks in all these products. And so you'd have a car that's all ready to go, except it doesn't have the computer chips that manage the air conditioning or the four-wheel drive or something like that. So it gets hung up. So it became clear to administration officials in the Trump administration and then the Biden administration and members of both parties in Congress that the United States needed more domestic computer chip supply. Augmenting that was the fact that Intel had kind of ceded its leadership position in computer chips to Samsung and especially TSMC in South Korea and in Taiwan. And advanced chips, the United States wasn't making any of the most advanced computer chips anymore. And so that meant for applications like artificial intelligence that we were going to be more dependent on products that came from overseas. So it became clear that there needed to be something done to bring this industry back. That started in earnest, really 2020, 2021, and then Congress passed this $52 billion Chips and Science Act in 2022 to provide direct funding for manufacturers like Intel, as well as seed money for research and other things to make the domestic industry more robust and more competitive.
So all this money became available, but then the actual rollout, getting it out to companies and to universities to do the research that you mentioned, that's all really just begun fairly recently.
Yes, the Commerce Department, after the bill passed, started to put together the framework and the administrative infrastructure to begin parceling out the money. But then when you have sums this large, you know, companies are looking for several billion dollars apiece. And of course, they're all lobbying very hard. And so you have to set up a criteria. Well, who's going to win and why? And of course, you have politicians jostling for who's going to get what and where. You know, states, Ohio, New York, Arizona, Texas, you know, politically powerful states and politically contentious states, in some cases, all want to share this. And so members of Congress and the administration are trying to parcel it out in a way that's economically and politically optimal.
And it's of course, not just going to Intel, but other companies as well, including some others that have operations here in Oregon.
Yeah, the very first round of funding in January, at the very beginning of the year, the first money the Commerce Department started to hand out, that came to Microchip Technology for factory in Colorado and also for their Gresham factory for an ongoing upgrade there.
So what is Intel planning to do with its $8.5 billion plus another $11 billion in loans that the federal government has committed to the company?
So the Intel's digging itself out of a hole. In the latter part of the last decade, it fell behind technologically, as we mentioned, and it really lost its engineering edge. It wants to essentially spend its way out of this problem. there's a new manufacturing technology called extreme ultraviolet lithography that Intel is convinced can help it bridge the gap between where it fell and where it wants to be on the very leading edge. But these tools are extremely expensive, and they're huge, and they don't work in existing factories. So Intel is essentially building new factories to accommodate these EUV tools. And that's what's coming in Arizona, where they're building two brand new factories and retrofitting a third. And they're building two factories in Ohio, where Intel had no prior operations at all. And then they're adding a fourth phase to this D1X research factory in Hillsboro. This is where Intel essentially cooks up the recipe for each new class of chips and then exports it to their factories around the world. So Intel's putting its spending at $100 billion for all of this, and the $8.5 billion in direct subsidies, $11 billion in loans, and then a 25% tax credit that's part of the deal as well, will significantly defray those costs.
You have talked on this podcast before about Intel trying to make up some ground. Company is building all of these new factories, expanding factories, but that's a process that takes years. The company had, I think, committed to a faster timeline for trying to catch up with its competitors and get things going. How is Intel doing both in that work to catch up in its technology and just financially as a company?
It's a mixed bag. What Intel announced when the CEO, Pat Gelsinger, took over, 2.5 years ago now? Maybe it's 3 years ago now. Time gets away from me. But when he took over, and Pat Gelsinger, as people may recall, he was one of Intel's top executives for many years here in Oregon. He was the vice president, their chief technology officer. He left for another company and then came back to run Intel. And he said, we're going to have five new technology nodes in 4 years. And what that means is, you know, five leaps in capabilities for these chips in a four-year timeline. That it used to be that they'd have essentially one of these new nodes every couple years. So this is Intel playing catch up. It may not be quite as dramatic as a leap as it sounds, because the definition of a node is fungible. These new generations are you know, not necessarily as great a leap as there might have been in the past, but still it was a very aggressive timeline. By all indications, Intel has succeeded or is succeeding with that time frame. They're delivering the advancement there they promised. They're also committing to catch up with these rivals, TSMC and Samsung. By Intel's reckoning, they're getting there. TSMC would certainly disagree with that. These other companies aren't standing still. They're making their own advancements. But there's no doubt Intel has made progress technologically. That doesn't necessarily mean translate into business success. All the spending Pat Gelsinger announced turned off investors. Intel's stock plunged from 50 or 60 bucks to 20-something. It has recovered considerably. It's in the low 50s again now, but it's below where it was at a time when the rest of the chip industry has soared. Intel's at a big disadvantage because Gelsinger's predecessors did not prioritize artificial intelligence, and that is what everyone wants now. NVIDIA, started by an Oregonian named Jensen Huang, but the company is now based in California. It really focused on AI, and they're thriving. Intel is, to say Intel's playing catch up on that doesn't even begin to tell the story. They're way back, but they may be able to plug into parts of the AI ecosystem. And the other element of Pat Gelsinger's turnaround strategy was to open up Intel's factories to allow other companies to make chips there. That has been slow starting, but this CHIPS Act money, these new factories, the new production capacity Intel will have as a result, that gives Intel an opportunity. NVIDIA's chips are primarily made by TSMC now. TSMC's capacity is finite. They can't probably meet all the demand that NVIDIA wants, that Apple wants, that other companies are really seeking for semiconductor production. And so there's an opportunity for Intel there if they can capitalize. It's a big shift for Intel to open up its factories. There are indications they've been making progress, and there are certainly indications that this additional production capacity that they're building will make them, at least position them to take advantage of that.
Right. Well, let's get back to this new federal funding. Intel said this week that in its announcement that this federal funding will unlock $36 billion in investment by the company in Oregon. That is a huge number, I think bigger than what it says it's spending in Ohio, where it's building new factories from scratch. Can you help unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, so Intel's not comparing apples and apples when they put these numbers out here. So they say, yes, we'll be spending $36 billion in Oregon, $32 billion in Arizona, and $28 billion in Ohio. And you look at those numbers and you say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Intel's expanding a factory here, whereas they're building two new ones apiece in Arizona and Ohio. So what's going on? Well, what's happening essentially is because Oregon is where Intel cooks up these new generations of processors, they need to constantly be retooling their factories to have the most advanced equipment in there. And so that means they're spending a ton of money. This isn't new. This has always been ongoing. What is new is these EUV tools we mentioned, this extreme ultraviolet lithography that enables smaller patterns on silicon wafers. These tools are not just huge, but hugely expensive, $400 million apiece. And so the cost of retooling the fabs, this research factory in Hillsboro, D1X, the cost of retooling it just goes up and up and up. So of that $36 billion, most of that is going to be for the regular process of retooling the factories, which has gotten more expensive now. And some unspecified portion of it will be to build this fourth phase of the factory. And that will be a major project. There will be thousands of construction workers working on that. But the retooling doesn't have the economic impact locally that building a new factory does in Arizona and Ohio, because the tools just slide into the existing facility. That doesn't mean that there isn't an impact. The fact that Intel does this research here is why Intel's largest site is in Oregon and why it has 23,000 employees here. And so the $36 billion number isn't, you know, a huge economic windfall for the state, but it's not a new economic windfall. What it is it underscores Intel's importance to Oregon.
And even as on the very day that the federal government announced these multi-billion-dollar subsidies for Intel specifically, the company was already signaling, and in fact just saying, that it probably won't be enough to get the job done. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, a part of it is that Intel's got its nose under the tent, and they say, wait a minute, look, the federal government will give us billions of dollars. Why should they stop? And on a call with reporters, Pat Gelsinger essentially said that, you know, that we'll take all we can get. When you're investing, you know, $100 billion, if you can get the federal or state governments to pay for some of that bill, that's hugely appealing. So that's part of it. Having succeeded once, Intel's going to go back for more. But part of it is also an ongoing concern that the United States tax policy and its financial incentives are not aligned with what other countries are doing, with what Israel is doing. Israel will flat out pay Intel to build fabs there. Intel's building new fabs in Germany. The European Union is providing something similar to what the United States is offering. China is a very big supporter of its technology industry and providing direct support, billions and billions and billions in direct support to that industry there. So I think Intel won't go back necessarily and look for more direct subsidies. Well, they may some, but not on this scale. But what they want are research tax credits and other structural changes that will make technology investment more appealing in the United States.
Do you have a sense of whether there is appetite for that argument?
Pat Gelsinger brought it up at a recent conference with Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, and she just smiled. She didn't really respond at all. It's not a fight the Biden administration wants to have at all right now in an election year when every element of the budget is contentious. I think what Intel is counting on is that the impact of this spending in individual states, in Ohio and Arizona and Oregon and New Mexico, will be so evident. Well, and that's just for Intel. Other companies are building in Texas and upstate New York and in Idaho, that it will be quite clear that this kind of work has a big impact locally, and that there will be sort of a grassroots, bottom-up push toward more of this. And I think that's plausible. As we know in Oregon, the chip industry has a big economic footprint, and now it will in other states as well. And I think it's plausible there may be more government support.
And you mentioned earlier there is still money to be allocated from this pool, including money for research. And there is plenty of support locally here for some of that research money to come to Oregon. What are you watching for to see what happens next?
Yeah, so there's these semiconductor research centers that were part of the CHIPS and Science Act. And the idea is that there will be, you know, clusters of scientific research, industry research, in various parts of the country. And what Intel has said explicitly is it wants an advanced lithography research center in Oregon. Oregon has a very powerful U.S. Senator, Ron Wyden, is chair of the Senate Finance Committee, who was also instrumental in steering the CHIPS Act. He's made it clear that he wants that here. He had Gina Raimondo, the Commerce Secretary, come out to Oregon, how was it, last spring, I think, just about a year ago, and arrayed a whole bunch of people around her, including Intel CEO and him, and they all said, one after another, we want this research center here. And the Commerce Secretary said, well, you're certainly positioning yourself well for that. So, you know, no commitments have been made, but the idea is that that would provide an ongoing center of research that would draw academic and industry resources into Oregon, and in the long, long run, propel more industrial activity here.
Well, let's move to another story that you've been covering. The Oregon Employment Department recently completed an upgrade to its decades-old computer system and launched a new interface for people who are applying for jobless benefits. How is that rollout going?
It's a little opaque. It's a little hard to tell from the outside in aggregate how it's going. But for some individual unemployed people, it's going very poorly. So the Employment Department, Oregonians will remember, very nearly collapsed in 2020 under the flood of jobless claims that accompanied the pandemic. And the root cause of Oregon's issues, every state was under strain from that, but few, if any, did as poorly as Oregon in 2020. And the issue we had then was our computer system was from the 90s, it's COBOL-based mainframe. It couldn't adapt to all the changes that were coming that Congress made to add additional benefits with the pandemic. It did eventually adapt, but it just took months or even a year to make adaptations other states made in days or weeks. And there was an enormous backlog. Every time somebody had a problem, it was very difficult to resolve because the computers were so rigid. So Oregon adopted this new computer system that's more nimble. The problem is that federal pandemic funding to administer unemployment programs had fallen off, and Oregon's unemployment department, its performance had slipped badly in the months before the new computer system launched. People were already having trouble getting through on the phones. It was taking longer to process claims. then this new computer system came in, and it's hard to say it made the problem worse, but it introduced it in the long run, it may make things a lot better, but it introduced complexity for claimants and confusion. And so some people at least had issues with getting their claims resolved, getting their normal claims processed. But since the employment department was already very strained in responding to issues and correcting problems, you know, any additional strain made things very difficult. And so people who aren't getting their claims processed promptly are just finding it absolutely impossible to address that. The employment department is overwhelmed by the number of calls and online inquiries. And so that's going to take some time to, that's going to take some time to untangle. You know, the employment department says that once it works through these initial issues, it will be more responsive over time. The legislature allocated some additional funding to it. Late in the year, it will have more customer service personnel, and it may be performing better then. That's going to take some time. It's not there yet. And so for those who are having issues now, it is a very painful time. And again, we're having people not getting their claims processed.
And I think much of the frustration, too, comes from the fact that when you encounter a problem, you call and you, you know, you're on hold for a very, very long time, or you can't get through at all. The phone lines are essentially jammed.
You've said it exactly, Elliot. People wait for 4 hours on hold and then get cut off, or they call and they get a busy signal or no connection whatsoever. It's very, very frustrating to people. And, you know, people who are unemployed are by definition in a difficult situation. And the unemployment insurance program is a form of insurance. You count on having that insurance available to you if you find yourself in this circumstance. It's not available to them. That we have a much smaller number of people affected than during the pandemic. Right now, our economy is relatively healthy. It's in fact very healthy. The labor market is, at least for workers. But for those people who don't have jobs and aren't easily finding new ones, it's not being able to get the insurance payment that you're legally entitled to is very difficult.
And it certainly raises the question of what happens if the economy were to take a turn for the worse.
Yes. Yeah. If the unemployment rate goes up and we can't keep up with that, then we find ourselves back where we were in 2020. The employment department would say that the new system, once people are accustomed to it, once it's worked through this initial backlog, will be more responsive. And it would say that the new funding that was allocated by the legislature this year, that it will start to spend, the department will start to spend in the back half of the year, that will position it better for the long run. And that may be true. It may be that we're working through a difficult transition here. But it's very hard to say that with any certainty right now.
And has the state been able to offer any kind of outlook or timeline for when things may, you know, be more manageable, either because of some of these initial problems settling out or new resources becoming available?
I asked them that directly on our most recent media call, and the short answer is no. They said it is very difficult to say. So I'm not going to venture any predictions either. I'm afraid it's going to be a slow process for at least some people.
Well, thank you, Mike, for coming back on Beat Check.
Yeah, good to be here, Elliot.
And thank you to our listeners for making Beat Check with the Oregonian part of your routine. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It helps people find the show. And tell a friend to help spread the word. The best way you can support our journalism and stories like these is with a subscription to the Oregonian or Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Talk to you next time.